Blitzky and Son. Oh, hey there. Please hold while I transfer you.
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's a swell new system. You call me and I transfer you. Hold on a tick. Chuck,
yeah.
Do me a solid and take this to Mr. Pete.
Sure thing.
Chuck, don't trip over. The cord.
Times have changed. So should your PBX. Get Virto from Vox Orion, a hosted IP PBX solution for your business that offers fantastic savings. Available from 65 Rand per user per month. For more info, SMS your name to 45678.
And we'll call you.
Well, we've been doing this for 50 weeks now. Welcome to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Craig Wilson. So episode 50.
Yep. I was going to say we should have had streamers and party hats, but it's a bit difficult on a podcast to get that across.
Sure, for sure. Well, let's dive straight into it. Windows 8 has been announced. Developer preview released, which I've installed on my Windows box under using VirtualBox, a virtual machine. I'm not quite brave enough to run it as my primary operating system just yet.
No, and they do warn you against it in the notes. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. But lots of news coming out of the big Build conference, Microsoft's Build conference in Anaheim, California this week. We've run some content from our colleague Brett Haggard, who's been over there covering developments. And yeah, lots to talk about. You've had a brief look at Windows 8 installed. What do you think of it?
Well, you know, as you and I were saying when we first looked at it, I think one of the interesting things is how well it's going to work across platforms. You know, some of it, when I say work well across platforms, some of it's a bit peculiar actually on a desktop, because you can clearly see that it's intended for a touch sort of interface and to swipe between things and to swipe up and swipe down. And he said suddenly the Windows button has a newfound prominence, as it sort of seems to operate as the default take you back to home button. And it's really interesting, clearly, that they're also looking to phase out the desktop in the sense that we know it. But I really like the tiles. I really like the interface.
It's very, very clearly borrowed from the Zune and then the Windows Phone 7 design style of Metro UI interface. I must say I quite like it. I imagine it's a little more pleasant to use with your finger on a touchscreen. I found that sometimes it was a little finicky having to use the mouse to move tiles around, and especially when you log in and you have to sort of drag the start screen up to log in. But it's still alpha software, so Microsoft's still got a lot of work to do, and what we're looking at here is by no means the final product.
Absolutely, it'll definitely be refined. And as you said, there are a couple of really nice touches. Windows, or Microsoft at least, seem to have developed a bit of a sense of humor. You saw in the error screen, or the blue screen of death, as it's known, doesn't show you a log of everything going wrong and all sorts of code. It now just gives you a sad emoticon, and they've got some other sort of tongue-in-cheek comments. What was the other one you saw?
During the installation process, the end-user license agreement.
That's right.
There was a message there. I can't remember the exact wording, but it said something along the lines of, make the lawyers happy and read this. Read the legalese below.
But don't worry, there won't be a test afterwards.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's little touches like that. You know, I think as we've said before, and we've said in recent podcasts over the last few months, I think this is a really great sign. It feels like Microsoft have turned a corner, and I'm really, really excited to see Windows 8 once it's out of the development phase and it's actually rolled out to the public. And I think it's going to be great. You know, I've seen a lot of other techies are playing with it, and so far most of them seem to rather like it.
I think my reading of it, I think Microsoft has gotten a bit of a scruck, a bit of a fright from the iPad.
Absolutely.
I think they've realized that their core business could come under threat in the future. Now, certainly, there are still going to be hundreds of millions of PCs sold every year.
Sure.
But, you know, as computing form factors change and as people fall in love with devices like the iPad, Microsoft does need to come up with a solution that works on those devices. Now, interestingly, they're taking a very different approach to Apple, which has developed much more lightweight software to run on its tablet computers and its phones, whereas Microsoft is taking the Windows operating system and shoehorning it down onto these devices.
Sure.
Which company strategy will prove the right one in the long term is still very much open to question.
It's interesting. It's nice to see that they have taken such a different approach too, because that's sort of refreshing. You know, for a long time, as Apple will tell you with all of their ongoing lawsuits, they just feel that everyone else has tried to sort of copy them. And it's really nice to see someone taking a fresh approach. And as I said, I'm a big fan of this idea of the same sort of OS across multiple platforms. You know, one of the other interesting things to come out of the build, the big keynote, was their talk about what they're doing on the cloud, because obviously everyone's talking about it, and Apple's iCloud was their one of their big announcements last time around. And, you know, I think this idea of an OS that operates on different devices combined with the ability to, you know, save images and that sort of thing to the cloud makes for a really compelling proposition. And as you said, the challenge with the iPad is that for a long time, Microsoft's strength was the fact that every company put in PCs. But more and more people are demanding that enterprise supports whatever devices it is that they want to work on,
yes,
like the iPad. And I think the Microsoft approach, as you said, it's difficult. It's tricky that they want to shoehorn this OS down onto everything. But I think it's a great and refreshing approach, and I really hope it works out. I really can't wait to see it, the sort of finished, polished product.
For sure. I think one of the most exciting, and we know this was coming in anyway, but the most exciting aspects of Windows 8 is the fact that it's going to run on low-powered ARM processors, and not just on the Intel processors that we used to in the past, which means that you're going to be able to get Windows 8 running on these slim, low-powered, new form factor devices like slates and tablets, etc. Samsung gave away to the attendees at Build a prototype. I think it's a prototype of their Windows 8 tablet. Looked pretty good, running a Core i5 processor, interestingly. So quite a powerful little beast.
Rather potent, yeah. And hopefully also, I mean, this move to ARM will also hopefully increase battery life, because for all of these portable devices, this is still one of those great challenges, is how to get things to be more powerful but more efficient. And more energy efficient, and the little bit that I've read about it suggests that this might be one of the steps towards that.
Yeah, I see there was some controversy coming out of this keynote, and Microsoft they weren't backpedaling, but they claimed that they had already said this, although a lot of commentators said they hadn't made it clear. Is the fact that classic Windows apps are not going to run on ARM-based Windows machines,
right?
So you're not going to be able to install, I don't know, if you run. I don't know, I think the example I was reading on CNET or somewhere this morning was you're not going to be able to install your Quicken 99 software in your tablet, because it's on your ARM-based tablet anyway, because it's simply not going to work.
Sure.
Which is unfortunate, but I'm sure guys will come up with ways of emulating it on those devices.
Absolutely, sort of, yeah.
Generally I like it. It kind of feels, and Brett made this point, it kind of feels that you're running almost two operating systems in one, though. The fact that you just click on the desktop icon in the tiles when you start up and you get the traditional desktop. In fact, you can just hold down the start button to go back to the tiled interface, hold it again, go back to the desktop interface.
Sure, and it feels like two sort of different worlds, but I think they're going to phase out the desktop in time to come. Much the same way that Apple have now that icon-based display, which neither you or I particularly like, in Lion. You can see that the sort of traditional desktop layout is something they're trying to move away from. But and that's one of the things that I think is most exciting about Windows 8, as we said before, is, you know, tiles offer far more sort of information, and they seem to be of far more value than the icon-based model that the iPad and now Lion is trying to promote. I've never been a big fan, because it's still everything simply separate, and you still have to open everything to actually interact with it.
Yeah.
I think the tiles it's just a far better interface to promote, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see other people copying that in future. You know, just as they did with widgets on phones.
Yes.
They're just infinitely more useful if you can actually interact with the content, and particularly when you can use that content across different tiles and across different apps without technically having to open them.
Yeah. There's no doubt that this represents the biggest change in the user interface in Microsoft Windows since Windows 95 was released.
Sure.
It's that big.
Sure.
I mean, since Windows 95, we had the start button, and it's progressed from there, but it's been the same basic concept. Windows 8 changes the basic concept of the UI.
Sure.
Although the basics, if you want them, are still there.
Yeah, and we still have the start button, but as you said, perhaps we're a couple of steps away from that being phased out entirely.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of promise, and it's just nice to see the turnaround. You know, if you think back a few years, the nightmare that was Vista, and then the turnaround they made with Windows 7, which, to all intents and purposes, I thought was a pretty good and a really great operating system. And you know, now the move to 8, if 8 can be half as successful as 7 was, then they'll be doing all right.
What I really like is the native support for multi-monitors in Windows 8.
Indeed, and the recognition that more and more people are using that and want to work that way. Yeah. I mean, that was one of the things in Venice that I've always liked about Apple, is that they just handled that sort of thing far better. You plugged in a monitor, it picked it up, it said, right, it's this resolution, where do you want it? You know, left or right, and that was it. And for Windows, it was often a lot of messing around, especially if you wanted more than two monitors, which, sure, isn't that common, but... You know, for those who do, it really shouldn't be a difficult process, and it's nice to see that they're taking this into account.
Definitely. I mean, I'm really looking forward to running Windows 8 on my setup here at the office, because I have three 24-inch monitors all connected next to each other, all working through Hydrovision technology from AMD.
Show off.
And it's really going to be fantastic when I get this tiled interface running right across those three monitors. And
absolutely,
quite powerful. But, it's... must emphasize again, this is alpha software, it's developer preview, so I've had experience with running developer preview and even beta software from Microsoft before, and what you see in the beta and what comes out at the end is usually, the final product is usually quite different to what you see in the developer previews. Although I've been playing around with Windows 8 for quite a bit, and previous betas from Windows I've found have been pretty unstable. This one is rock solid, hasn't crashed once.
Yeah, I've seen that. And
and it runs fast. I'm running it in a virtual machine. So, you know, I'm running Windows 8 on top of Windows 7. And it's smooth. So I think running natively on that box, or most machines, it should be pretty good. I think Microsoft actually said that for the first time, this is going to be an operating system that requires less system resources than the previous version.
Yes, I was going to say, it's actually the minimum specs are lower, which is fantastic.
Yes.
And a move in the right direction again, you know, making, you know, OSs need to get lighter, not heavier.
Yes.
And I also really look forward to seeing it on a tablet, because I think that's where it's really going to shine. And hopefully we will get to play with one of those as soon as they arrive locally, or as soon as Samsung decides that they're not just making prototypes, they'll do general ones. But I'm looking forward to seeing it on different devices too, because I think that's where Microsoft is really hoping that it will come into its own.
Yeah, well, I was hoping Brett would bring his one back, since he's Apple, but apparently all the media there had to hand them back to Microsoft. They weren't allowed to keep them.
That must have been disappointing for them.
Yes. Well, I guess we won't be seeing one for a while. What else do we want to chat about? Oh, yeah, the other big news this week, of course, was Vodacom and BIS, the BlackBerry Internet Service, and a bit of a PR disaster for Vodacom, wasn't it?
Yes, as you say, I'm very glad I wasn't working at Vodacom this week, particularly in the corporate comms, because it's just been an absolute nightmare, really. I mean, since that story broke, I'm sure most of you are already familiar with what happened, but it's also been an interesting display of the power of social media today and what it means for brands, and how hard it can be when you make a mistake, which really is what this was. This was just a massive error.
Just to go back a bit for those who don't have the history on this, Vodacom sent out a media statement. When was it? Monday now.
Monday, yeah.
And we picked it up here and read through it, and they were talking about network upgrades and, you know, building out fiber and expanding their 3G network, etc. Then tucked at the end of this statement was a curious addendum about the BlackBerry Internet Service and the fact that Vodacom would now be throttling all their users who consume more than 100 megabytes a month on the BlackBerry Internet Service from 3G to 2G speeds. And this led to a bit of an uproar, to put it mildly.
Yeah, yes.
If you go and read the Facebook comments on Vodacom's page on Facebook, and just look at the comments on Tech Central and some of the articles that we produced, as well as on social media sites like Twitter, the outpouring of rage was unbelievable.
Yeah, and rage. And I think that the problem was twofold. The first problem was this 100 megs. The problem was the figure, and the other problem was this notion of throttling, because obviously BlackBerry's big selling point has been unlimited browsing and unlimited connectivity, and Vodacom says, and you can understand their argument to an extent, that there is they said 5% of BlackBerry users account for 95% of the data that's used on the network, and that one particularly nasty individual had managed to download 310 gigs in a month. And obviously the problem here is people are sort of sidestepping what the system's actually meant to do, and finding ways to tether to their computers and use it as a modem and essentially download from torrents sites and the like, which, you know, isn't what the service is intended for. But, you know, the rage came from the fact that, you know, obviously the other 95% who aren't abusing the service were going, well, why can't you just punish those who are?
Exactly.
You know, you can clearly tell who's doing it, and they're in breach of the user agreement if they're using it for that. And what you need to do is contact them and and punish them, not punish the entire user base. And the other problem was that 100 megs.
The 100 megs. I think that was the biggest issue. I mean, 100 meg is piddling.
Yeah, I mean, today, even a moderate user, you know, 100 megs a month is just not sufficient.
Yes.
I mean, even if you're a very average, just check your email, post a couple of statuses on Facebook from your phone, you can go through 100 megs in a month in absolutely no time at all.
Now, if they come out and said, we've got this problem, and we need to find a way of addressing it, and what we're going to do is we're going to contact customers who use more than, say, 5 gig a month or 10 gig a month, because clearly there's a tiny minority who are using vast amounts of data for the service, using the service for what it's not meant to be used for.
Sure,
but don't punish everybody. Just update your terms and conditions and state clearly that if you use more than, say, 5 gig a month, then your service will be suspended.
Sure. Or you will be penalized, or you will be, exactly, as long as it's outlined clearly, or cut them off for a week.
The fact is there are millions of BlackBerry subscribers on the Vodacom network, and 5% of millions is a large number.
Sure.
So you're penalizing a fairly large portion of your base.
Sure, absolutely. But yeah, to penalize everyone. It's also interesting. I mean, the subsequent, you know, Vodacom have reneged on that. And, you know, Peter Ace came out in a tweet, and then in a statement on the company's Facebook page, saying that it was a miscommunication and they won't be throttling. And, there will be no limits on data. And they're working with RIM to find a solution to these people who are abusing the network. But the problem too is a lot of the comments I've seen afterwards, there's a lot of people frankly just don't buy it. A lot of people feel like this was what they meant to say, and they didn't anticipate the backlash,
and now they're looking for any way out of it,
and now they're trying to make excuses. And unfortunately, you know, that's very difficult to recover from.
It's certainly
tarnished them. You know, in combination with that there was a Friday a few months back where much of the network went down, and they were very quick to rectify it. But I've also seen a lot of people in the comments talking about that as well, and it certainly damaged their reputation, and they're going to have to do they're going to have to work very hard to regain the trust of at least a couple of hundred of subscribers who we've seen really, really getting upset with them and threatening to take their business elsewhere.
Yeah, they do seem to be developing a reputation problem, which I think they're going to have to be very careful in addressing.
Yeah, and how they manage that is going to be really crucial.
Because already I think there's already a perception in the market that they're expensive, especially if you compare them to the Young Turks, if you like, in the industry, like Cell C and Ata, which have come to market with very aggressive promotional pricing. And Vodacom has been seen not to meet those prices head on. For very good reasons they can't, because they've just got many more operators on their network, and the financial impact would be too severe.
Sure, and they're just too entrenched. And as you said, the network has too much. There's too many existing customers. But it's also, you know, it harks back in a way to Microsoft many years ago, in the same way that Microsoft was entrenched with business users and had this enormous sort of dedicated base, and was just the de facto biggest company. Vodacom is the de facto biggest operator. But the problem is they risk not being able to maneuver quickly enough to match these challenges from the newcomers, and people are certainly starting to see them as not the company they were, and as a little too comfortable.
And certainly the market has got a lot more competitive in the last 18 months or so.
Indeed, and I think they're going to have to work hard to not only keep customers but to entice new ones.
Definitely, and I think they need to be very careful about how they communicate what they're doing.
Sure. Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see. I mean, the one thing we haven't had, and not for lack of trying, is we haven't had any comment from RIM. We haven't had obviously, now that Vodacom has retracted this statement.
Well, Vodacom says they're working with Room to try and find a solution.
Absolutely, but Room has been very quiet. You know, yeah. We've tried to get comment from them, and we were told on Monday that they were in ongoing talks and that they were trying to find a solution. But as soon as Vodacom changed its tune and said, no, we aren't doing this anymore, we still haven't heard anything. There's been no comment. Yeah. And I mean, if I was at Room, I would also be a little bit upset in the wake of this. Because it's a great differentiator.
This is bad news for BlackBerry. I mean, if Vodacom were to do this, it would take away one of the big selling points of the BlackBerry service.
Sure. And I mean, BlackBerry, frankly, at least globally, have had enough bad news this week.
Yeah, there is also the share price in pre-market trade. We were just looking this morning following the profit update yesterday, or the profit fall yesterday, down 20%. I haven't checked this afternoon pre-market. Actually, the US markets have just opened, so we'll take a look just now.
But sure. And net profits down from almost $800 million down to $430-odd, which is almost half on the previous quarter. So, yeah. You know, if I was Room, I would be very upset with Vodacom, but they've been very diplomatic and they haven't said anything. And of course they have to be.
They can't go and diss Vodacom.
No, indeed. But yes, interesting times, and it'd be interesting to see how Vodacom react and what they do in coming months to try and turn this sort of
reputational problem
reputation around. Yeah. Mm.
Great. I think we need to take a break there. We'll be back right after these messages.
Switchboard. Why, hey, Sunshine. Let me transfer you. Please hold. Switchboard. Why, I'm just Peachy. Thanks for asking. Please hold. Switchboard. Oh, dang. He's just stepped out of his office. Can I transfer you? Please hold. Bill! It's your wife!
Times have changed. So should your PBX. Get Virto from Vox Orion, a hosted IP PBX for your business available from only 65 Rand per user per month. For more info, SMS your name to 45678.
And we'll call you.
After the advent of the telephone, it took mankind 70 years to invent the color television. And yet, it only took the next 23 years to invent lasers, the internet, to put a man on the moon. Ignition sequence start. It begs the question, what will the business world be like in the next 23 years? Wherever your business is at, Telkom Business will be there with you. Telkom Business.
Welcome back to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Craig Wilson, and you're listening to episode 50. So, Craig, interesting developments around the National Consumer Commission while we're talking about the operators. You had a long conversation yesterday with Mamadupi Motlala, who is head of the National Consumer Commission. And I myself haven't been following the story very closely, but there's been some interesting developments there around the operators, the big operators, with the exception of Neotel, all objecting to what?
Well, all objecting to the terms of the Consumer Protection Act, or CPA. Essentially, what Mokhlala and the National Consumer Commission are arguing is that under the terms of the CPA, at the moment, none of the operators comply. And
in what respect?
Well, the problem is, firstly, they, in terms of contracts, they need to outline in explicit terms what contracts will cost over the full term. They need to make it, they need to allow customers to cancel contracts within, with a sort of a month's notice, and they need to not automatically renew contracts. These are just some of the problems, but there are a number of issues where the NCC is saying that operators aren't complying. But the biggest of these is that they're saying they're not being transparent enough in their offerings, and that the CPA has very, very strict guidelines about what information you need to provide consumers with, and that operators simply aren't doing it. And there was initially a deadline set for the middle of this month, by which time operators needed to comply. But as you said, all except Neotel have objected to it. And they're all essentially, by the looks of it, trying to draw out this process as long as possible. Some, like Cell C has turned around and said, well, no, we've objected because we do comply. They said, to their thinking, they do meet all of the regulations. But my chat with the NCC said, well, they certainly don't feel the same. They feel that contracts are still excessively opaque, and that when it comes to things like bundled services, you know, where someone will sell you a laptop and a and a smartphone and a dongle, all in a bundled package for a set fee over a month. They're saying that you're obliged under the CPA to say, well, what would this cost if I bought all three of these individually? And you need to make it very explicit what the financial and the general sort of benefits, the sort of usage benefits are of buying a bundled package. But that there's the essential argument is that there remains a lack of transparency from all of the operators. And this includes Telkom and ATA. And there's going to be a lot more to this fight as the operators contest that they are doing what they need to. And the NCC says, well, no, you're not.
What's your view of this? Is this regulation gone mad?
Well, no. I mean, for the most part, I side with it. I side with the NCC, I think. Things like the ability to automatically renew contracts, which for a long time a lot of the operators have had. You know, yes. Unless you give notice in writing 30 right. days before the end of your contract gets automatically renewed. And, you know, I think things like that, there's no doubt that those only benefit the operators. They don't benefit consumers. And there are consumers, unfortunately, you know, most consumers don't read user agreements. Most consumers don't go through contracts. I certainly don't, and I don't even consider myself to be most consumers. But, you know, for a long time, there has been this impression that contracts are designed to trip people up, and they are designed to maximize profits for the operators, and they are certainly not they're not worded and they're not laid out in a way that makes it clear to consumers what they're getting into. And you know, I think the whole goal of the CPA is to try and improve this and to try and change this, particularly for those, you know, who can't really afford to accidentally extend a contract that they don't intend to. You know, on the whole, I think the CPA has the right approach. I think, understandably though, by the same token, operators answer to shareholders, and their goal is to, you know, turn as big a profit as possible. And it's not in their best interests to make it obvious to you that, you know, if you buy this contract, it's going to cost you, say, 12,000 rand over 12 months. You know, which when you look at it at 300 or 400 rand a month, doesn't, you know, people don't make that connection, unfortunately. And the CPA is saying, well, you need to make it explicit to people so that they fully understand what financial obligations they are signing up for.
I'm interested in your comment just now, because I was actually chatting to a friend of mine over the last couple of days about this, your comment that companies answer to their shareholders. Is that right? Should they be answering first and foremost to their shareholders, or should they be answering first and foremost to their customers?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think this is the problem, because, you know, at least on paper, they should be answering to their shareholders. I mean, the goal of the firm is not necessarily to first to keep customers happy. It's the first objective is to be a profitable firm.
But if you keep your customers happy first and foremost, then the second one follow.
You would think so, yes. I mean, this is one of those chicken and egg problems. Is what, you know? Where do you do customers come first, or do shareholders come first? Of course, the CPA is saying, well, in this instance, people are putting the shareholders first, and it should be customers. But the operators are turning around and saying, well, no, we put our customers first precisely because that means we become more profitable over the long term. And this is the problem. It is how you interpret it and who you agree with. You know, at the end of the day, though, I think the important thing is we could certainly do with more transparency. I would love to see ads that say, you know, this package over 24 months will cost you this much money. And that this bundle, you know, costs however much money, and if you bought everything separately, it would cost you 3,000 rand more.
Yes.
You know, I think that is in companies' best interests too, because consumers value transparency, and consumers value companies that, you know, appear to be doing everything they can to show them exactly what they're making them liable for.
Yes.
It's a complicated one. It's not clear cut by any stretch of the imagination.
And the operators are definitely going to have to tread carefully once again in the PR stakes here, because the last thing they want to do is seem to be fighting the Consumer Commission, which is seen to be championing consumers' causes.
Absolutely.
There is the risk that in fighting the National Consumer Commission aggressively, they could come across and be seen as anti-consumer.
Sure, and they also have to be careful, because now that, I mean, you know, there are some very strict penalties laid out in the CPA. As the NCC were telling me, you know, one of the things they're lobbying for is they're saying if the operators don't shape up and meet the requirements, they're lobbying for them to be hit with, fines in the region of 10% of their annual turnover.
Good grief.
You know, which is enormous. So they've got to be careful, because now that there is actually regulation to support this, if someone can enforce it, you know, obviously, I mean, if someone tried, it'd get bogged down in the courts for years. But if there was a successful case and a precedent was set, operators stand to lose a fortune if they don't comply. And as you said, do stand to lose in reputation stakes as well.
Yeah. Great, moving on. Sorry, I didn't have a good segue for that one.
No, that one is terribly serious too, so...
Yes. I guess this one's fairly serious as well. Orange, the rumors of Orange buying Business Connection. Orange, of course, being the quite large, very large telecommunications operator owned by France Telecom. They operate in, 12 or 15 African territories, not in South Africa, although I think they've had a small services arm.
Predominantly in Francophone countries. Yeah,
mainly. So this speculation, and I've heard it from three separate sources who claim to have knowledge of the discussions that they are going on, and that we could, in fact, according to one of the sources, have an announcement within a couple of weeks. Business Connection, of course, is one of the country's biggest IT services companies, listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange with a market capitalization of over 2 billion rand. So it's not an inconsequential purchase if it happens.
Sure.
I'd guess they'd probably have to offer in the region of 3 billion rand if they wanted to buy it. But certainly it could have a big impact on the convergence space in South Africa and on the IT services market more generally, because if Orange comes into this market and gets into the IT services market, and presumably they want to do the deal to take their converged services offerings into many of the African markets in which they currently have operations, it could have a dramatic impact on the competitive landscape, especially in the IT services market in South Africa. And I think we could see other telecommunications operators
trying to snap up their own IT business services firms. Yeah. Absolutely. Well,
you spoke to Asher Bobot, who's the CEO of EOH, which is doing incredibly well at the moment. They put out their results, earlier this week or late last week?
One of the great recent success stories in what has been otherwise a few months of doom and gloom from many companies at annual results we've attended.
Yes. EOH is absolutely flying. They've been flying for years,
they're doing extremely well.
Great guns. But Asher Bobot said to you, when you asked him about whether they'd be interested in an acquisition, he said something along the lines, and I'm paraphrasing here, over my dead body.
Yeah, just about, yeah. Yeah. He said people were, there's always interest, but that they were not interested. They weren't reciprocating the interest. No, he suggested EOH is looking to remain independent, but that certainly there's interest, and that there's been a lot of interest lately in this space for people to offer converged services. It is the way things seem to be going, and he was quite dismissive, though. He said they're not interested. But then on the other hand, I also spoke to someone from Gijima, who suggested, I spoke to Carlos Ferreira from Gijima, who is the chief financial officer, and he suggested that they might be interested. I mean, he didn't actually say anything definite, but there were certainly hints that if a suitably large telecoms company were to express interest in Gijima, it wouldn't be as opposed as, say, EOH. So it's certainly a space to watch. And the Orange, you know, it's big news for us. It's not necessarily big news for Orange. I mean, Orange is an absolutely enormous firm.
Yes.
And even a 3 billion rand acquisition, particularly once you put it into euros, is a fairly minor risk for them to take.
Yes.
They're a sort of 300 billion euro company.
That big?
Last I saw, between 200 and 300 billion, because they're in so many different regions, that for them it would be fairly minor comparatively.
Okay.
But it certainly could be a big shakeup on the African landscape. And definitely, as you said, I think it's because South Africa is also seen as a great stepping stone into the rest of the continent.
Yeah.
You know, they already have a great footing in terms of telcos.
Yes.
But they don't have a great footing in terms of IT services.
And yes.
That sort of, the demand for that is growing exponentially around...
of course, telcos see IT services and... certain types of IT services as a growth opportunity, especially as the pressure and competitive pressures grow in their traditional telephony business.
Sure.
Business Connection has long expressed an interest in expanding more aggressively in Africa, so it would be a natural fit, because it would allow Business Connection to expand its IT services offerings into the territories in which Orange already operates.
Sure. Yeah, and as you said, it's a great sort of foot in so many doors. Mm. We'll be interested to see. We haven't heard anything further on it yet,
no.
But you can be sure that as soon as anything's finalised, there'll be statements out.
And yeah, I mean, it could all be wrong, but the fact
or it could fizzle out and not the, not actually
or it could
happen.
Fizzle out, but yeah. The fact that we've heard it from three separate sources suggests that there is definitely something on underway.
And a number of the analysts I've spoken to since have suggested that they think it seems like a logical fit and a good deal. Mm. Yeah,
definitely. Great. Before we wrap up this week, Craig, you had a fascinating interview with a guy called Ari Khan, who used to work at MTN, now lives in Boston,
somewhere in the US.
I think it was Boston. There's this big, the background to this is there's a big fight going on at the moment between an ex-Vodacom employee called Nkosasana Makate, who is suing Vodacom, claiming that they stole his invention for Please Call Me, the prepaid service where you can phone someone without airtime or send someone a text message without airtime and ask them to call you back. It's proved wildly successful in the South African market.
And in others. It's gone on to be rolled out by most operators elsewhere.
And anyway, so this lawsuit is ongoing. And Ari Khan got hold of us. And you interviewed him, Craig, and he said that this whole Vodacom case is absolute nonsense because, in fact, he invented Please Call Me while working at MTN.
Indeed, yes, it's a really interesting story, actually. As we said, Ari Khan says that he actually came up with it while working at MTN, and that unlike Mr. Makate, he's not seeking compensation. All he wants is the rightful recognition that it was his idea. He's actually gone on to register a number of other patents. In the hundreds, I think, at this point. During his time at MTN, he says he came up with this idea and then he sent an extensive paper trail to support this, saying that he then discussed it with members, the executive staff at MTN the following day, and then they filed a patent application in January of 2001. And that once that was done, it was rolled out at the end of January, and that Vodacom, meanwhile, only actually launched the service in March. And he sent a supporting document in the form of an internal memo from Vodacom announcing that they would be rolling out the service that March. And yes, his argument is that there is no case because he came up with it and he registered the patent first. And he has a fairly convincing paper trail to back up his claims. And his line of argument is essentially that unless they can demonstrate that they filed the patent first or that they publicly disclosed it first. Now, the difference there is if you publicly disclosed it but didn't patent it, you can't necessarily claim ownership and it becomes sort of in the public domain. But at least you would prove that you'd come up with it first. But his argument is that unless they can provide either a proof of public disclosure or a patent that predates the 16th or the 18th, I forget the exact date, I'm afraid, of November 2000, that they have no claim, that neither Vodacom nor Makate have any claim to the idea.
It's going to be a fascinating court case. We're going to be watching it quite closely. I've got no doubt your Tech Central piece, Craig, is going to end up in the court records.
Yes, I'm sure it'll come up. And it's just interesting to watch. And it's funny. I mean, we've seen so much about patent law lately. And his advice too was that people need to make a note of things and need to keep things, make sure that they can prove when they came up with something precisely for cases like this. It's the other argument too, of course, is that Makate may not necessarily have a real claim to it because if he was employed by Vodacom at the time, as most employment state, if you come up with something during the employ of someone else, it can belong to them. And his argument is that Vodacom failed to compensate him. His official line wasn't that they stole it. He came up with it there, and he did suggest it to someone, and then had an email back saying, "Well, once we launch it, should it prove successful, we will compensate you." And his argument is that he hasn't seen any of the proceeds from what has, as you said, proved to be an incredibly successful service. So yes, he's arguing for compensation, and meanwhile, Ari Khan is arguing that he's not entitled to any to begin with. So we'll have to wait and see how it plays out.
What will be particularly interesting, of course, is if MTN enters this into evidence suggesting if Vodacom enters this into evidence against Makate suggesting that their co-competitor MTN actually invented the service.
Absolutely. Yeah, that'd be just be amazing. Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to wrap it up there. We're a bit over time. For myself and Craig, until next Friday, thanks for listening. As always, if you want to give us some feedback on the show, we'd welcome it. The email address is info@techcentral.co.za. Until next week, cheers.